Well, I'd like to welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit, Lisa Dinhofer. We're going to be talking about coping with non-death living losses as a caregiver. She's a certified thanatologist and communication expert with 18 plus years teaching, consulting, and coaching experience for effective messaging and situational management for realistic expectations in the aftermath of traumatic events, death notification and employment termination, workplace harassment and bullying, and other workplace issues. She's a frequent educator on resilience building for burnout, compassion fatigue, primary and secondary traumatic loss, vicarious trauma, and horizontal violence. I'd like to welcome you, Lisa, to the Caregiver Smile Summit 2. I can just say by reading your description, I have so much to learn, just some definitions, if nothing else. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Okay. Well, let's just get right into it. What is a non-death or living loss? I think I kind of sort of understand what that might be, but why don't you tell our viewers?
A non-death living loss are losses that are often triggered from a particular event or a diagnosis, but they are ongoing and continuous, seemingly without end, or an end that you would prefer not to have happen. You are living with a loss that continues to give grief. There's no, when someone dies, when we have a physical death, the person dies, we go through our closing ceremonies of funerals, and then, you know, that loss, the loss itself is completed, and now we're all, you know, tasked with coping with that loss. Living loss is when the loss is continuous. It keeps going on. There's ongoing uncertainty. There are multiple losses that go on with a living loss. There are secondary losses. There's a constant having to adjust to this loss. There can be chronic despair and hopelessness with this, and also intangible losses about what could have been, ideals, you know, things of that nature.
Okay. So you kind of mentioned some of the other kind of losses that go along with it. Is there anything else that we should be aware of?
In terms of what
the kinds of losses that you experience?
Okay. So some of the types of losses that would fit under this category, and again, a non-death loss can create as much coping difficulties and heartache and pain as a physical loss. And that's a big misconception out there. So if someone betrays you deeply, wounds you deeply, financial infidelity, extramarital affair that is just going to keep going on and on because there isn't going to be resolution to this, dementia, someone coming back from war theater with a traumatic brain injury, very unexpected disability, substance abuse is a big living loss. And anyone out there who has a loved one who is addicted to alcohol or drugs knows that this is a loss that just continues. It's tinged with trauma and seemingly no end unless that person either gets help and recovers, which is always tenuous because relapse is always a possibility, or they die. So again, that living loss of an end that we really don't want to have happen. Even divorce and child custody issues, there's a lot of living loss there, particularly for the non-custodial parent.
Okay. So for our caregivers, I guess, particularly caring for elders,
yes.
I guess when somebody has dementia, some people start feeling like, well, they might as well be, I mean, I hate to be frank, but they might as well be dead.
Yes.
And is that kind of what we're getting at here? Is that kind of a feeling?
Yes. And the thing about living losses, non-death living losses, they incorporate other kinds of losses that are disenfranchised, meaning that they're not necessarily recognized and supported by the community, and also ambiguous loss. And the example that you just gave about dementia, ambiguous loss can take shape in a couple of ways. A person can be physically present but psychologically absent, which somebody suffering from dementia is, or someone can be physically absent but psychologically present, such as in a kidnapping or a missing persons. But the first example of this, physically present but psychologically absent, that individual that you knew, that you had a relationship with, it's not just that their memories are gone, their memories of you are gone. And so your relationship with them begins to dwindle because they can't remember you. Memories connect us, right? They're what bring meaning to our relationships. And dementia can also change a person's personality, and not always in a very good way. So caretaking someone with dementia can be extremely challenging. And also, it can, living losses can bring about a sense of guilt, right? Or shame in that guilt, because we become exhausted. The thing about living losses, the biggest challenge to a living loss, is that there is big potential for coping fatigue as well as support fatigue. Just coping with this day after day, seemingly endless, and the only end to this is maybe the person dying, and our wishing for that, maybe not even consciously, but unconsciously, can bring about a lot of guilt and shame, anger. And it's not really that we want the person to die necessarily. We just need a break. We need some, you know, relief. And those who support us can get tired of trying to support us, that support fatigue, when the problem never gets better. When people support other people, they often need a little payback, meaning that their support has actually helped you resolve a situation or help you cope. And with living losses, it's the whole chronic continuity of it all.
Right. And I certainly can understand that. My mom passed in 2016, and she medical issues, not cognitive, and she lived a good long life at 94, but you still going through 2 years of caregiving with her, yeah. Yet those things are in the back of your head. And being an Italian Catholic, you do get even more guilt, I think, than
others. Yeah.
so there's that. Is it important for a caregiver to recognize, is there any advantage to it, to recognize that this is a loss, so that it's almost like recognizing alcoholism or drug abuse and then moving on to being able to then cope with it? Is that important to understand that?
It is critically important to understand that, because if the understanding that what you're experiencing is a loss, you won't address it and you won't support it. And quite frankly, caregivers who have insufficient support are lousy caregivers. I'm going to just say that right out there. This notion that caregiving comes from this endless wellspring of love and care is a myth. Good caregivers, good helpers, know that they're going to need respite and they're going to need support, because this is a huge task. So in understanding that this is a loss, one of the first things that we can do to help ourselves cope and deal with this living loss situation, particularly if you're the primary caregiver, is to embrace this for what it is. Embrace this, that this is a loss, this is a huge change in your life, not just the person that you're caring for. And acceptance is different from resignation. When we accept, we put our arms around what is, and we say, okay, I accept this, and now what do I do with this? When we resign to something, acceptance, not resignation, when we resign to something, we typically go like this, and that is a very supplicant position. It's a position of powerlessness. So to accept what is, which can be really difficult, accept what is short-term and maybe what will happen long-term as a result of your having to really interrupt your own life to care for someone else. It could mean you don't get that promotion, you don't make partner, maybe you're not going to be able to have a child. Maybe there's going to be all kinds of things that might not happen for you because you are called to this task. And that creates grief, that creates loss, it can create resentment. So first we need to accept this, and then we ask ourselves, okay, this is what's on my plate. What do I do with this? What do I do with this? That's a position of power, of embracing what is before you and believing that there is something that you can do. What do I do with the challenges that I have And another thing is you have to have a support network. And there are more than one people in your support network. And if you only have one person supporting you, they're going to get tired, right? So you have to have a full-on support network, someone who can support you with the logistics, maybe just getting food in the house and getting the laundry done, and someone who can support you with some respite so you can go take a nap or get out of the house or go to the park with the kids. Someone who can perhaps support you spiritually. Someone who can help support you just to have some fun. Believe it or not, having fun is integral to our brain. When we are having fun with someone we are in a reciprocal meaning relationship with, it's very healing and supportive. So we have to nurture the relationships that we have, because it can be tempting and an outcome of caregiving to lose those relationships. And that's a huge mistake.
Right, right. And I guess people, you know, when somebody dies and it's a finite death, somebody says, you know, they say, I feel like I've lost a piece of me. And mm-hmm. And I guess there's an acknowledgement of that as well when somebody's health condition changes or any of those other circumstances you mentioned.
Absolutely. Having to be a primary caretaker for someone for a long period of time, there's a social isolation. Your social persona goes undercover because you're not out and about in the community as much as you were necessarily. You're with this person. So your social relationships can suffer. Just getting out enough can suffer. And you begin to lose, you can feel as though you could begin to lose your identity, who I am, who I was before this, who I could have been if this weren't going on in my life, who I am now. You can feel as though, is this all I am? A nursemaid, a caretaker. And it's normal to feel resentment as well as grief for yourself and for what this person is going through. Anger and resentment is normal. It's not a referendum on how much you love this person or on how good of a person you are. These are normal responses to a very abnormal situation that literally came in and may have turned your world upside down.
Right. But great point. It's an important, I guess, for people to understand too, that this kind of loss, the duration of the loss is longer than
yes,
a death.
Absolutely. And that's the challenging thing. It just goes on and on and on. When you know that someone is quote unquote terminal, and the technical diagnosis for a terminal patient is that their death is imminent within 6 months, right? That's what doctors use to, refer people to hospice. But when someone has a terminal condition or a decompensating condition, but it's going to be a very long process to get to that, or this may not be terminal. This is just how it is now forever. Someone comes back from war with a TBI. Someone has unexpected disability. This is forever. The ongoingness of it, the non-ending, the chronic nature, that is what can seep into our soul and just suck the ability for us to hope and be positive and get sucked in by despair and hopelessness because of the chronic nature.
Right, right. And we know, I mean, I've seen circumstances of caregivers who've done it for a decade, some right. more. And as in my own sister's case, she was caregiving for my mother and she predeceased her, so which made me the direct caregiver. So those statistics are real about caregivers predeceasing folks. So because you do so much workplace work, can you address kind of the whole issue of caregiving in the workforce? I mean, you've kind of addressed the caregiver piece of recognizing the loss, getting the help. But what about our employers? You know, I don't think, except for a few enlightened ones out there, the whole culture around caregivers in the workforce kind of isn't really there yet. Even when we look at FMLA, it's always in the context of a woman who's had a child or, you know, paternity leave or whatever. What can you offer in that in terms of what's being done, what could be done, what should be done? What are your thoughts there?
Well, caregivers who are still in the workforce and caregiving, a lot of caregivers wind up having to suspend their career. or resign their job or go on some kind of sabbatical because the caregiving duties become too much and there's no one else to kind of help fill in. But unfortunately in the workplace, employees who are also caregivers of someone at home, unfortunately, leadership tends to look at these folks as an inconvenience. Like women who go out in maternity, it's an inconvenience. You are disrupting the flow of my team. You can't put in the same number of hours or maybe after hours if we have big projects or some kind of an emergency. And unfortunately, it's not valued. And I use that term very specifically because in our workplaces today, and because I do so much work with bullying in the workplace, right? So many companies talk about their companies being family. You know, we're all family. But they don't necessarily treat each other like family, or they treat each other like a very dysfunctional family. So there's not a whole lot of the concept of caregiving to each other in workplaces in terms of empathy in the workforce, social capital within the company. So if it's not happening there, it becomes harder for companies with that kind of culture to then extend that compassion and empathy and concern for their employee who are going home and putting in really a second job, starting right. their second job at home. And sure. there needs to be a look at incorporating compassion for these people will not diminish our workplace culture. It will actually improve it.
Yeah, absolutely. On our last summit, we had a gentleman named Don Weber. He's the CEO of Logistics Health. And he was on a PBS special called Saving Our Parents, I think it was called, somebody, you could look it up, but Don Weber, Logistics Health, amazing culture because he had went through caregiving for his mom and he realized how fortunate he was because he was the CEO and he could do what he wanted in terms of flex work time and all the things he needed. But, you know, after the summit, I talked to him again and he told me about, for example, one employee, and he has a lot of millennials, and we know 25% of millennials are caregivers now. And one millennial's mother, you know, was diagnosed with cancer. They basically let her take a leave of absence of whatever she wanted. They saved her job for her. I mean, just, you know, the things that he was telling me, when you look at their morale, their retention rates, all of those, the productivity, all of it is through the roof in terms of, you know, great numbers because of this culture, things that other people will look at and say, well, we can't do that. But yet when you do that, just as you just said, you know, good things happen for the company because you can't see the forest through the trees, so to speak, but a lot of people can't. So are there any, go ahead.
Actually, when companies embrace caregivers in the ways of, number one, recognizing the stressors that this person is doing at home and valuing what they're doing at home, and they embrace this person by saying, okay, you're valuable to us. We want to keep you. We don't want to create a situation where it becomes binary. You have to choose your job over your loved one. We don't want to create that. What do you need? If we had the perfect world, what is it that you need? Now, asking that question doesn't mean you're going to create the perfect world, but you're just finding out what that person needs without the notion of restrictions on it. So once you know what that person needs, then the two of you can begin to craft something that is going to make sense and work for them and will work for you. Because when you do that for an employee, they will be loyal to you the rest right. of your natural life. They'll work to midnight every night. They will be the hardest working employees. They'll be productive. They will believe in the country, in the company, and give their passion to you, which is what really sustains employees in a workplace especially if it's a high pressure workplace.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, you shared, you know, some tactics and coping mechanisms. Are there any other ones you want to share? And before we end, are there any resources? So if a caregiver is watching this right now and they get to this aha moment of, oh, yeah, it's a loss and I need to do some of these things. Are there other mechanisms that you suggest and other resources where they can look for information?
Okay. You have a week?
And remember, we're going to give them something of a handout so that they could look at this issue a little more in depth as well.
Okay, so the handout that I'm giving is a checklist that looks at the difference between grief and depression, and that's really important because caregivers can become depressed. And when I say depressed, I don't mean just feeling sad, but clinically depressed. So if they are, they need to know that. But secondarily, one of the first things a caregiver can do is pick up the phone and call someone or text someone and say, I need some help. And they can do that with more than one person. They should be looking in their community for resources for caregiving within hospitals or hospice, for support groups for caregiving. In terms of what this does to your body somatically, they have to support the body. They have to support the body and they have to support their brain. I am a huge proponent of acupuncture. In my life, at times where I was under enormous stress for a very long time, my adrenals were shot, my body was exhausted, and acupuncture really helped me get my adrenals back online, my endocrine system back online, and my body learned how to relax again rather than in staying in a hyper state. The thing about that I love so much about acupuncture, it works. You don't need a doctor's prescription, and there are no side effects. And you want to go to somebody who is, of course, certified and knows what they're doing. Reading also, I find, if a person is prone to want to read, reading memoirs of people who also found themselves in a caretaker role or found themselves in a position of deep challenge and stress. When we see what other people are capable of doing and what other people went through, it taps into our empathy, but it also helps us realize, yes, there's hope for me too. I can do this. And sometimes we read stories of people going through things that are worse than ours, and it helps us put our own situation into perspective. You must get enough sleep. And I know that that's a laughable concept if you are jumping up all night long caretaking for someone and during the day. But here's the thing about constant interruption of sleep. It can shorten our life. It begins to destroy our brain cells. It can interfere with our ability to make good sound decisions, and it interferes with our endurance, our ability to cope. So if you're not getting good sleep, you need to put some supports in place that will help you do that, right? You also have to get proper nutrition. We're going to just maybe grab whatever we can, and we're a culture that just eats way too many carbs and sugar, which gives us that initial high initially, but then we crash and it saps our energy. And the thing about caregiving is you need energy. So you need to be having regular, well-balanced, hot meals, and you should be having meals with other people. There's something about breaking bread and eating with other people, aside from the person that you're giving care, that lights up the neural pathways in our brain for people that we are in, again, the reciprocal, meaningful relationship with. So there are those things. And to insist on respite and enough of a support system, put a support system in place for yourself and get rid of the notion that you don't need it or you shouldn't be asking for it. Because as I said in the beginning of our discussion today, if you don't have a sufficient support system in place, you're going to be a lousy caregiver. So if you want to be effective, then you have to put in place support to help you be supportive of someone else. You cannot support from a place of depletion.
Absolutely. I mean, we're really talking about empowering the caregivers.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. I was talking to someone else and we were talking about technology and how it aids caregiving. And she said the best technology are other humans. So that was reinforced twice in one day. So Lisa, I really, really appreciate this. This is a fascinating topic. And I think just the realization for people to understand that they're suffering a loss when these things happen is an important takeaway. If they take nothing else, that they need to acknowledge it and then do something about it. This has been awesome. And I thank you for participating in the summit.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful. Lovely. Thank you.